we have a 300-year fixed period, and it applies when the effective date of the trust is on or after September 1st, 2021. And that's the effective date is another term that we know that that's when our instrument has become irrevocable. So as Eric has just said, that's when the will takes effect when the testator has died or when a trust by its terms becomes irrevocable. And there's an issue here, you know, mentioned on the slide, irrevocability of a trust, including one that arises in the future, presumably is determined by reference to when the trust instrument became irrevocable. So we're running from that initial date of irrevocability. And then, again, to recap, on this 100-year rule, we do have a new rule that's applicable to the real property assets held in trust, and that is found in subsection F. So subsection F prohibits a provision in which a settlor of a trust directed the retention or prohibited the sale of a real property asset for a period that's longer than 100 years. And in speaking about this with Eric, we think that the new rule is going to be moot if your instruments that you draft generally provide that the trustee has the discretionary power to sell a real property asset. So you probably don't need to worry too much about this. But I think some of us draft instruments that might contain other types of restrictions on saleability of real estate. So when we do planning for real property assets that might be a legacy asset that's important to the family, you know, the ranch, the lake house, et cetera, for those assets, we sometimes do create trusts that might restrict the saleability of that asset for a period of time that might endure for longer than 100 years. And in those instances, we need to be very careful to include not just the savings clause that Eric's going to elaborate more on in a little while, but also a provision that would turn off those restrictions that we might put in the trust agreement after the 100-year period has been reached. So in order to comply with this new subsection F, I think it's prudent, again, in those trusts that provide for legacy assets, possibly even in a broader context, if you tend to draft, some people don't, but if you tend to draft other trusts, such as bypass trusts, in such a way that maybe the surviving spouse or some beneficiary would have the right to use the residence rent-free for life, perhaps with Texas Property Code 11.13 in mind. You know, if you're doing any drafting that includes those restrictions and you're looking at life estates and so forth, there's a possibility you could run afoul of this rule. So we suggest that you turn off those restrictions, and we'll get to that more in drafting considerations. But just be mindful that there could be drafting that you've done that would necessitate including a savings clause that would override that restriction that you've put in place. Also, I just wanted to point out, going back to the 300-year rule, I wanted to circle back to that and chime in a bit on what Professor Johansson said earlier. You know, there are other interests that are being created that are subject to the rule against perpetuities, and they are not interests in trusts. And I want to emphasize this point. You know, Professor Johansson mentioned that you might create, you know, devises that are 2A for life and then go on and have additional beneficiaries following the life estate, remainder beneficiaries, for example. And I'd like to give an example to you now. Imagine that a friend of yours, a lawyer friend of yours, comes up to you and says, you know, would you help me with my will? And you agree to do so. And he says, well, I have my personal injury law practice. I inherited it from my father, and I'd like to leave it to my son, but he's an appellate lawyer working for a different firm. This personal injury is not his calling. So I think what I'd like to do is leave it in trust for my son for life until such time as his oldest child, you know, passes the bar and can take over the personal injury law practice. Well, you know, what is our applicable rule against perpetuities period on that intended device? Now, whether that's an advisable way to structure his plan is a separate question, but the applicable perpetuity period is not 300 years. There are no trusts there. These are estates in which trusts are not implicated. And I think it's pretty clear for those of us who've taken Johansson's real property course, which I'm not among those, but that we have an issue with a void remainder request there, because it is not clear. There will not be a certainty that the interest will either vest or fail the remainder interest over to the grandson of the testator in this case. So you shouldn't draft your interests that way, and you need to be mindful that a different rule against perpetuities period applies there. And now I'd like to turn back to Eric to tell us a little bit more about the other provisions of 112036 that could apply to trusts that were irrevocable already by the time of its effective date, 9-1.
Yeah, the two sort of easily understandable rules changes are the ones we just talked about, new 300-year rule for trust, but a special 100-year limit on restrictions regarding the sale of real property assets. But the third change is this sort of screwy one that's in section 112.036D, which, as I say here sort of negatively, purports to allow pre-9-1-2021 trust to utilize a floating wrap term, that's my terminology, if the trust has the required magic language. Most trusts created before 9-1-2021 are unlikely to have the magic language because it's unusual. It's not sort of the standard language we would have been using in older trusts. So you almost had to have been looking at the statute in order to try to come up with the relevant magic language. But if you did have the relevant magic language, I'm not even sure it works for trusts that were created before the enactment of this new rule for reasons I'll talk about before. But the key element of this new provision is that the relevant rule is the one that applies not at the front end, but as to every interest in a trust, it's the rule that applies when that interest happens to vest.